Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Have you ever struggled to find words to describe something that is ultimately indescribable? In today's podcast, I'm going to take a poetic approach in an effort to get at the heart of this online ministry. And from my first post in February of 2013, my blog, and now my 152nd podcast, has served to help people look critically at their frameworks and ask the hard questions of faith, religion, and belief systems in the modern age. As consciousness increases, the old wineskins and frameworks can no longer contain what is growing inside, and new ways of understanding the old truth must displace the familiar forms. So join me now as I share the metaphor of following a sound to help us tune in to our own inner experience and follow the liberating path of the exile. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in for yet another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. I'm so glad to have you here. Welcome to this broadcast and welcome to Sunday. Well, folks, as you know from last week, we are now exclusively on the podcast environment, no longer broadcasting on the radio. Made the change simply because the number of people responding and engaging and interacting with this ministry, the lion's share of people came from the podcast arena already, from the virtual environment. Not so many listeners, although there were many listeners tuning in, not a lot of them were responding or engaging. And I just think that's part of the way the media functions. You know, you can't just immediately interact as you might with a podcast or with a link or something like that. You have to go home and you have to look it up later when you're thinking about it. And you can only tune in at a certain time on a certain day. And I just think that the format was just a little different. Wasn't the best fit. And so that's why we're now all on the podcast environment. And as you know, if you've been tuning in over the last 32 weeks that I was on the air, I basically focused on doing Bible exposition as part of my format to try and really speak and reach out to the radio audience for the station that I was on. And while I did have some good, tremendous feedback from a lot of you that you really, really appreciate that kind of teaching, I'm going to take some time and kind of do some other things as well. And today's one of those things. Today I'm going to, it'll probably seem a little bit poetic, which for some of my audience might be just plain annoying. but there's certain things that only metaphor can get at. Richard Rohr is always telling us that metaphor is all you have in spirituality. Everything in spirituality is metaphor. And sometimes this is a way of accessing deeper inner truth, inner reality, inner experience that you know, a hard kind of a theoretical approach seems to not capture in the same way. So what I'm going to do is really kind of go back a little bit to the roots of what this whole podcast, this blog has all been about since February of 2013. It actually started before that, but the official blog was in February of 2013. And today the title is called To Those Who Can Hear the Tune. To Those Who Can Hear the Tune. And obviously by the title, you know that not everybody's going to quite get this. This may just kind of glance right off of you, but there's going to be some people for whom the words I'm going to say are going to resonate so clearly and loudly off of your soul. And I hope for those that this really drives you into a new place of action and deeper inner experience, okay? You know, first thing you should probably know is that in the years that I've been blogging and podcasting, I've learned never to underestimate the reach and the scope of of these messages that go out. I mean, you know, my audience may not be that big, but compared to some of the big masters and people that are out there, but I mean, usually this blog is read in more than 50 countries every single year. And I don't have 50 countries on my distribution list, I can tell you that. But what's amazing is that you never know when you're going to send something out, and then it goes out, and, you know, who knows who's going to find it? How long ago are they going to get it? I get these emails regularly from people in distant places that just stumbled upon the content or had a loved one forward it to them, and they're in another country or something else, and they've expressed their gratitude for what I've been saying. And today's reflections are not some regurgitated, trite, kind of pithy sentiment that barely veil the trap of religion, which is just so common in Christian writing. I don't know if you read much in the faith, but it's always the same cake with a different frosting. And so often it's really just a Red Rover, send whoever's reading right over. And what you're going to read and hear today are really the well-worn and tried applications of a deeper message, a message that I barely had the faith to embody and to follow, but somehow managed to. And I can tell you this, the cost of following this voice, more like a tune or a song, this message, right? This inner, we've heard the expression, he goes to a beat of a different drummer. We all have this kind of voice within us, and it's more like a song. It's more like a tune that you tune into and you just follow. And I followed it into the wilderness of exile, and the first thing I realized is that nobody with even one foot in the establishment could come with me. Like, the people I loved and knew and trusted and had deep friendships with, they can't come with you when you go. It's not that they won't come or that they can't come. It's that they can't go while you go. The turnstile on the narrow path allows only one at a time. And there's something about that. There's some part of this where you're going to be going a little alone. But there is communion. There's fellowship. There's community here. And it's either with the song alone, or it's with other weary travelers who are like me, following that other something other. That familiar sound which escapes definition. And early on, I sought validation or a sense of camaraderie by re-entering the systems that I was leaving in order to, you know, find, you know, definition or whatever. I tried to find validation, and it's like, man, I wanted to make sure I didn't feel like I had totally left. So I went back to these systems that had all their order and all their definition and all their hierarchy and all their power, where control and compliance are valued more than freedom and competence. But of course, regaining what I left was impossible, because those who stayed resented and feared the dissident like me, only slightly less, though, than they resented and feared the object of their pious devotion. That was a sobering, eye-opening awareness for me. Is that people actually resented me and feared me for leaving. But deep down, their whole spirituality is completely based on fear. And so their fear of God is the only thing that keeps them more stuck than any anger they might have at me. And so community here within the exile is always, I'm sorry, it's not in the exile, but the community in those systems is always subject object, right? And that is a really big disappointment once you get out into the exile and you realize that true community is always subject subject. There's a unity in the exile that doesn't exist within systems of control and fear. Now, these brief exchanges remind me and reaffirmed why I follow the song in the first place. I mean, there's something in me that just said, you got to get out of here. This isn't it. The framework, the offering, they're not giving anything to the city that they think they are. There's really no inner or outer transformation by all this effort and output. and it's crushing me. And the tune was just telling me, there's something more. And it was unlike anything else. And I knew it existed before I'd even reached the tonic note. I mean, the nursery rhymes that the herd was playing just heaped upon my heart an incredible amount of burden and pain and sadness for those who labeled them as the song. I'm like, you can't, it's like in my mind, I'm like, this isn't it. And you should know that. But the exile is not a desert. It's not isolation. It's not marginalization. Those all belonging to the masses under the anesthesia whose faith is in their faith and not in their power behind it, right? Their whole trust is in fear is based in their system. They're completely stuck on the container and they're forfeiting the contents. See, the exile is really all about the contents. It's divine union. It's complete satisfaction. It's the presence. It's gratitude. And there's this part of me that just wanted to put down roots and just stay right here, right now, in this amazing place of inner transformation, right? But the very second you think of staying and parking yourself, and you know, whenever my tent peg would appeal to permanence. It's like a wind, the song that drew me in would withdraw and blow over the next distant horizon, and I'd have to go follow that song again. And inviting as many as I can into this arid, drifting sobriety, I follow the melody that enticed me into the freedom I now experience. But this pathetic thing is that whenever I try and mimic the tune, my pitch and key often offend those who are not accustomed to such inner space. And so whenever I lower the volume on myself, I torture myself instead. And so each valley and each hill offer some new perspective, and they bring with them a new face who's just as befuddled as I am, with a hungry love and searching for what is next. Nobody in the exile is here by their knowing. They're all here by their not knowing, by their uncertainty, right? They diminished they saw that certainty had no real value, not for the future. Uncertainty actually had more of a gravitational pull. Love is like that. We just go with it. I mean, we always fall in love, right? It's not you reason yourself into love. It's not reason. There's no single emotion, no strategy or design that puts us into this exile from where we started. Those are all for the kneeling to institutional powers, those who hope they'll validate their fake IDs there. It's the greatest trade in the universe, where one trades their soul in exchange for an identity that's not your own. You see, the exile is the only safe place for those who find this trade unpalpable at any cost. See, better to be in search of the true self that has been lost than to cling in certainty to a false self. And see, I never thought I could love like I do out here in this exile. You know, where there is no race, there's no religion, there's no creed or gender or status. There's just a bunch of people who heard that song too. They hear the tune in the backdrop, and we're all working together on this endless quest to find the source of it. See, love is easy here. It's not contrived. Love is free. See, people who believe in obligation, they'll never find the exile to be a fair place. Those who are just bound by duty will never be able to work out the details of the exile. Manipulators, you know, you can only produce a vacant strategy here. It won't work. You know, surface love makes me laugh immediately before I cry. Not just for myself, for laughing. Like, you know, I feel bad for laughing because that's kind of a prideful disposition. But then it makes me sad for those who cannot let go into the bottomless free fall that is love itself. You have to let go. You have to turn loose of the control, you know, and the framework, or else you can't be free in love. If you think you're going to splat on the bottom, if you live in that kind of fear, you'll never, ever understand the exile. See, the exile is, it's not an escape. It's ultimate reality. As such, it's the power for living. It's the ability to see beyond. Like I always say, see beyond everything. It's that which compels us to empty ourselves back into the sleeping world. And strangely, facing others is when the pursuit of the song actually ends and our true lives begin. You see, upon facing the world, we discover that the song behind us, beside us, above us, below us, and within us, there's just a sense in which we have become so permeated by the song that trying to differentiate ourselves from it is actually dishonoring. You see, our life in the exile is now an invitation to come freely and taste that which is impossible in the captive world's three-sided cage. You know, I've posted about this a lot. There's a lot of people that could literally walk right out of their prisons, but they choose not to, because the fear of what's out there, the fear of their best self, their best true life, scares them. They're not afraid of something bad happening. They're actually afraid of becoming really, really amazing. So they live in these fear cages. I call them three-sided cages because there's not even a wall to keep you in. And for those who take refuge within this false self or within institutional power, our very existence is an indictment that chafes all the way back to the time that they too first heard the song, but exchanged it for the voice of power. Man, I've seen this over and over and over again. Some people who were with me, who I could talk with and have heart-to-heart, deep-to-deep conversations about ultimate reality, when I told them that the system is, it's not working, it's broken, we need to get beyond it, let's go free ourselves from here. And they would share this dream. And then I left and they didn't. And if I go back and try and re-engage with somebody like that, they resent me, because they know there was a time where they saw it too. They heard it too, but they lacked the courage to take a step. You see, these poetic words are just feeble attempts and metaphors for an inner experience that I think we all touch, at least at some level. I mean, the words are only tiny containers for something that's so big, it seems silly to try and even express it. There just isn't a word or a phrase or a doctrine or a theology or a framework that can fit it all. But I try, and I try week after week, day after day. I cry out to any soul that can hear me. And I never tire of this. I never run out of content. I never lack for motivation to get up and start writing or start talking about this. If I had $1 bazillion in my bank, I would still do this work. Nothing could change it, because it's part of who I am. It's my creative, divine impulse. And I mean, how could I tire of such beauty? I'm always talking about it. And yeah, some people get confused and they don't see it, or it's hard to understand. And I get it. You can't really have a great conversation with somebody who's halfway asleep. They kind of come in and out of engagement, and that's so much of our world. And I'm not asking you to trust me. I'm praying. I'm even begging that one day you'll be awakened to the spirit of life and freedom that's within you. It's knocking at your door. It's the voice calling to you, your own Lazarus experience, to come forth. Come forth out of your tomb. Arise, awake from your slumber. Come on out. And I hope that when you hear that voice, however faint and however small it is, that you will trust it. Trust that voice. It all seems so awkward or silly or even nonsensical until you've really oriented yourself from your sleep. See, then once you've awakened, you'll discover that home is not a destination. It's not like we're trying to get somewhere. And I think that's the biggest problem with religion. It's this huge heaven and hell binary. And the goal is really fire insurance. It's really to avoid pain. There's no real understanding of heaven. And it's always this distant destination that happens only after you die. And that's where your home will finally be. Until then, you just tolerate a terrible, horrible, depressing, evil, depraved, rotting, failing, miserable world and existence, right? But what if that's not the case at all? What if you woke up and realized that home is not a destination, but it's the center from which you'll live the rest of your life? Heaven is a place you live from, not a place you go to. And if you can live from there now, you do not have to fear hell. You do not have to fear loss. Because, like I said, this is a center from which you will live the rest of your life. And by the way, your life happens to be eternal. And all of this is as close as this next breath. You know, breathing is something we take for granted day in and day out. And I've written about this before, but you know, if you let out your air, your breath, and you just stop breathing, in 5 seconds, it's not an issue. In 10 seconds, it's not a problem. In 30 seconds, it's uncomfortable if you don't take in some new air. In a minute, it's darn right uncomfortable. And in 2 minutes, it's lethal. If you don't take in air in 5 minutes, you're dead. You see, breathing is not just an involuntary action, right? Breathing is taking in spirit and life. And what you realize is that it's being breathed into you at each and every time you take a breath. You're sustaining life. You're preserving. You're avoiding death. And so, you know, breathing out is not just exhaling, it's dying. And one new fresh breath of, you know, and the word breath and spirit are the same. And so when you take in spirit, life follows right in there. And it's like life is being breathed into you every moment because you don't consciously think about breathing. It's being done for you. So your life is really this kind of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation constantly where life is being breathed into you day in, day out, minute by minute, without hardly a care in the world. And so if we can pause long enough to just sit there and think, man, this breath is a sustaining, life-giving breath. What a gift. What a gift. And if you can start there, the spiritual journey begins. That's the exile. You'll begin to hear the tune. You'll begin to hear the voice. And if you follow it, it'll take you places you could not even imagine. It'll separate you from systems and people and groups and principalities and powers that are ruling you right now. But you'll be free, and you'll know you'll be free. And I have no idea who this post is actually going to reach or when it will get to you. I don't. I get these emails and responses months and months after these posts. So whenever this finds you, just know that I have been praying that it would find you in your soul. And it's phrased and worded in such a way that it hopefully will access that part of you, that deep down part of you that knows, that part of you that sits staring over your steering wheel in a parking lot or goes on a walk and just wonders, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something deeper. There's got to be more to this than what I have. And you know there's this existential burden within you and there's questions. This is what I'm praying. You'll find it. And when it does, these are going to come to you and you need to know it's not by accident. So may these words be a beacon of hope on your quest for liberation. When you do find it, I hope you'll let me know. Reach out to me so that you can join all of us who are walking together, humming this amazing tune.